GM, everyone. Welcome back for another community AMA. Let's see, the markets are looking pretty good. Uptober, as they say. So that's nice. Let's see. We've rolled out some more vaults on Sandglass. Our pools on Eclipse are up. Yeah, stuff is happening. But just gonna get straight into the questions. So first question we have from is Hib. They ask, without having to tell us which chain is next, on which chains could you deploy that are currently live? Aside from Solana and Eclipse, of course. And on which chains that are not yet live could you do it? So like we could sort of do it on any chain. There's no reason why we couldn't do it on any given chain. It's just a matter of practical differences and whether it's worth it on a given chain. So one thing is the ease of deployment. So like Eclipse, it was pretty easy because we didn't need to rewrite the code. And we could just deploy our program as is, the exact same one as on Solana. So like that's very nice. A downside, at least for the present, is that Eclipse doesn't have much volume. But of course, like they just opened mainnet, so that's totally expected. And that should increase from here on out. How much it'll increase, I don't know, but hopefully a lot. We'll see. And then like on the other end of the spectrum, like if something that would be like the opposite of Eclipse would be something like Arbitrum, where they are the EVM, so we would have to rewrite the code from scratch, which would take a bunch of work. And but on the other hand, this chain is relatively more well established and it's decently fast. That's a factor I forgot to mention. Eclipse is really fast, like similar to Solana. Arbitrum is pretty fast, not quite as fast as Eclipse, I believe, but still like pretty fast. And again, for like those who may not be aware, speed is important because the faster we're able to update the prices through our Oracle, the more frequently we can do that. The tighter spreads we can quote, and the tighter spreads we can quote, the more competitive we are. In other words, we get more volume because we are more often providing the best price. So yeah, those are a bunch of factors, and so we could deploy on any chain really, but it's just a matter of like all these different factors combined and whether ultimately it's worth it to try and deploy on that chain or not. So yeah, and then you ask what's the next chain where we'll deploy a pool? Still undetermined. yeah, there's a lot going on right now, but yeah, deploying on more chains is not out of the question. I believe that's the same thing I said before we had deployed on Eclipse. So yeah, I mean, like, we're always evaluating new opportunities as they arise, but would really rather not mention specific chains until like it's determined, like we're 100% sure that we're going to deploy on it, because just don't want to create any false expectations that will and then like disappoint people when we change our mind or something. So yeah. And then another question from Hib. Are you still bullish on Sandglass? Like, especially conceptually, it's just a very useful financial primitive. Like, that hasn't changed. Like, it's a huge part of TradFi, so there's no reason to think why it would be any different in crypto. Obviously, it'll take time for the level of adoption within crypto of yield trading to reach TradFi levels, but yeah. And then there's Pendle, which kind of proved out that there can be product market fit for yield trading. And then there's us. And while it's still early, there are early signs of product market fit. I think a lot of people still don't know about us, and our liquidity isn't uber deep, but there's definitely been traders looking to take advantage of especially the points trading. I guess that's kind of expected, because that's how Pendle really got going, was through points trading. So yeah, right now we're looking into integrating liquid restaking tokens, or as Jito calls them, VRTs. So, and like those tokens will, most of them at least, will have points. So like right now we have a bunch of staked SOL pools, the MSOL, JitoSOL, BSOL. Like those are like okay, but the yield of these staked SOL tokens don't change much, and so it's kind of not much to speculate on. And that's why they won't have much volume. Whereas with the points, we can expect much more volume because people don't know how much points are going to be worth, and people's opinions on that can vary widely. Some people just want to sell them at the earliest opportunity. Some people want to bet on their value being high and therefore and want to buy the points, even if that means losing some of the yield. So, yeah. Anyways, yeah, I think, I mean, I'm definitely still bullish on Sandglass. And then, final question from Hib. Have you made progress on the token question for Sandglass? Sort of. It's something we've thought about from the very start. So, in a sense, there's no progress to be made. It's not like we started thinking about that after we launched or something. Because I don't know, it's kind of an obvious thing to take into consideration, right? Users will of course have some kind of expectation around a token. And so will the Lifinity community, as is being made evident right here. But yeah, it's to like I mean, I've mentioned this before, but first of all, there's the question of whether to create a token or not. And ideally, you don't have to. Ideally, we already have the Lifinity token, and we develop Sandglass with funding from Lifinity. So in the ideal case, Sandglass just gains major adoption, and then all the value it generates goes to Lifinity token holders. But if that proves to be difficult, then tokens are great as a way to bootstrap adoption usage, as we've seen many times throughout crypto. So yeah, I mean, but yeah, these are the exact same thoughts we had even before we launched Sandglass. So in that sense, there was no progress to be made really, but yeah, it's something we've thought about from the start again. I really like, again, nothing to say, because until something is certain, like, there's really no point in mentioning it. So, like, I appreciate that you're trying to get alpha or whatever, but I don't think it would be very prudent for me to, state anything until, like, things are certain. So, yeah. Sorry for that non-answer, but I am convinced it is the best answer. All right, TMS asks, what's your latest assessment regarding Jupiter RFQ? So for those who aren't aware, Jupiter announced RFQ a while ago. This is a request for quote. So it's like kind of a system where market makers can directly integrate with Jupiter. And so like, you can kind of think of it, like, it's kind of similar to like market makers using an order book and then that order book showing up in the Jupiter routing, but it's a little bit more direct. And I don't know all the details. What I do know, so earlier someone asked me this when it was initially announced, and I said, like, I don't really have much of an opinion because I need to see more details. And that's still kind of where I'm at. In particular, I haven't seen, so Jupiter said that they would gradually introduce Jupiter RFQ into the routing, but I have yet to see RFQ in the routing even once yet. So yeah, I'm still kind of, I still don't have much of an opinion, to be honest. I guess the opinion I have is, like, maybe RFQ is, like, pretty difficult, because what was that other project that is also working on an RFQ? Like, they're basically trying to be another aggregator of sorts. I'm forgetting their name right now. But they've been, like, you know, teasing stuff for a long time. I guess they're, like, they have, like, a private beta or something ongoing. But, like, it's taken forever for them to launch. So and that's why this makes me think that, like, RFQ is, like, pretty difficult to develop or something. So, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on it right now. So basically still waiting for more information. But, like, ultimately, I think, you know, it's similar to order books, like market makers on order books, where the market makers can kind of implement arbitrary strategies with algorithms as complex as they want them to be. So, I mean, yeah, it's definitely competitive with us. But how competitive, how much competition does it add to the already existing order books? I don't know. That's yet to be seen, so we'll see. And next question from TMS. What are the team's top two priorities at the moment? So I would say, So one is, and this, like, almost never changes because it's kind of a constantly moving target, but it's just optimizing Lifinity. This involves, like, adjusting the concentration and the fees, as well as opening new pools, things like this. The market conditions are always changing, and so we're constantly optimizing that. It's kind of a never-ending game. And I mean, Lifinity is obviously our main revenue source, and it's a very good revenue source. So that is effort well spent, for sure. And then the other thing is sandglass. We're always working on opening new pools. In particular, currently we're working on what we call permissionless pools, which is basically pools without an oracle. So for those who have like read our sandglass articles, you know that the pools with oracles are nice because they track the on-chain yield and adjust the pool's price accordingly, which results in less impermanent loss, or possibly even reverses impermanent loss. In that sense, it's very similar to what Lefinity does, with the one major difference being that Lefinity's oracle is based on off-chain data that we get from centralized exchanges, whereas with yield trading, the oracles we use, we're just getting data from on-chain sources. So there's that, and then but we're creating these permissionless pools that don't use an oracle. What's good about these is that we can open vaults more quickly because we don't need to create a custom oracle for each new asset that we integrate. And that also reduces audit costs because we don't need to audit each time we open a new vault. We just need to audit it once, and then we can use it for any asset. And there's definitely assets for which it's not possible really to track the yield on chain. And so for those kinds of assets, oh, and also assets which have points, and the points are the majority of the yield. Certainly the main thing that people will be considering when trading these assets. It's nice for those as well. These permissionless pools will definitely come in handy, especially now as there's a bunch of liquid restaking tokens, LRTs and VRTs, that are launching on Solana. That's the priorities at the moment, the top two priorities, I would say. It's not the only thing we're working on, but yeah, those are the two top things. Romulus says, "Sup, Durden. Will Sandglass contribute to Lefinity's revenue and therefore be an additional source of rewards to VE Lefinity holders?" So what I've always told the community is that Sandglass has been developed with funds from Lefinity, both the VEIDO and the ongoing revenue from the DEX. And so it only makes sense that the value that Sandglass generates goes back to Lefinity's token holders in one way or another. And like we haven't stated any details of like how exactly that will work. But yeah, that's the basic outline and all you really need to know at this point, I think. You say, "Therefore, is there a hint if early Sandglass LP providers will be rewarded?" Well, I'll leave that up to your imagination, as we haven't said anything regarding that. You're free to speculate, but also don't have expectations. Thanks, Durden. Big fan. Love your work. Thank you, sir. Let's see. Well, those are the questions I have. We have in the Discord chat right now. Anything else you guys would like to ask? Let me also check on the Twitter, see if anyone's posted anything there. Well, I guess I can wait a while, see if anyone wanted to talk about anything else. It's been great to see that the Flare DAO has been quite active recently. Especially WTB putting in the work, making things happen. It's totally functioning without my input, which is great to see. And the efforts are definitely generating revenue for FlareDAO, so yeah, that's cool. In other news, the Flare bid is basically at its cap of 1,000 SOL, and fresh funding for buybacks should be rolling in tomorrow, day after tomorrow, something. So we'll see what happens there. The listed supply is always like hovering around 300, maybe a bit more than 300. Which is interesting because, like, that means, because, like, we do buybacks. I guess not too much in the recent months because the bid was depleted for a while, or just not full for a while. But yeah, I'm curious to see if that number is gonna go down, or if there's like people who are constantly, gradually listing their flares, just like keeping it at that number. Also, in other news, is the first time we did a buyback of Lifinity because it was below its book value. So basically what we did, in other words, is like we bought USDC for less than $1. Like we bought USDC for 99 cents, something like that, is what we did for Lifinity. Which is great because that means the price goes up. Not only that, but also that means the book value also goes up when you buy the asset below its book value. So everyone benefited from that. Right. Ezekiel says, Durden, please speak about volume processed by Lifinity lately. Is the increase only related to an increase on the volume from Jupiter and Solana? Let's see. So that's probably the main factor. Because yeah, I mean, volumes did increase quite a bit on Jupiter and Solana in recent months. So that's the main thing, but certainly not the only thing. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, our what I would say probably is our top priority is optimizing Lifinity's pools. And so we're constantly making adjustments. And like one of the big things that we've had to adjust for recently is Obric, the DEX that basically copied our market making model. Although it's still inferior to ours. What they do is they copy our model, use an inferior oracle, and then use lower fees. So actually, we're able to track their profitability, and it's like half of ours or something. But obviously, they're competitive with us because they use fees that are lower than ours. Yeah, so that's unfortunate that our market making model got copied. But yeah, so like a lot of the adjustments we've been making is to figure out how to best compete in this new market regime, if I can call it that. So like if they weren't here, volumes might be even higher, probably. But yeah, they're still quite good. But yeah, so like we're making micro adjustments in terms of concentration and liquidity and fees and stuff like that. But yeah, it's mainly just volumes increasing on Solana as a whole that's led to our increased volume. Romulus asks, what's our long-term plan with our 1.5 million Marinade MNDE tokens? I assume that's what you're talking about. Are you still bullish on our old thesis about bribes starting? I forgot what exactly the bribes thesis is, but like ever since we acquired the MNDE, what we've used it for is to direct stake to our validator. And that serves two purposes. One is that it generates revenue. It's just like extra staking yield, which is really nice. I don't remember exactly, but I think combined with the Soulblaze BLZE tokens and the stake that that is able to direct, it leads to a few hundred K of extra revenue for us per year. And that just stays in the book value. Like it just increases our SOL holdings basically. It's not something we distribute because it's not trading fees. But yeah, so that's one of the purposes. And the other is that because we have more stake, that improves our stake weighted quality of service, the SWQOS. And that means that our apps are more are able to more reliably land transactions, which is especially important for SandGlass. Less so for Lifinity because most of the Lifinity trading happens through Jupiter or through bots. So it doesn't come through our app. There's probably very few people trading through our app, which is just, you know, a Jupiter widget on our swap page. But yeah, but for SandGlass, you know, if people are going to use SandGlass, it's going to be through the SandGlass website. And so like having a bunch of stake for SWQOS can really help us for landing transactions. And yeah, it really matters because SandGlass transactions can be quite complex. They use more compute units. And the more compute units you use, the higher fees you may need. Or yeah, it's basically like harder to land transactions the more complex they are. And so having a bunch of stake really helps with that. Sorry. So am I still bullish on our old thesis about bribes? Yeah. The fact that I've forgotten like what that's about probably means that Marinade just decided not to implement whatever the bribes plan was. So I would guess that I'm probably not bullish on it just because Marinette decided to do something else. I mean, I think what they're doing is good though. It's basically people, I wouldn't say bribing, but they're bidding for steak. And like that only makes the yield higher for stakers, lower for validators, but higher for stakers. So yeah, that's cool. I think that's smart. I did suggest that to them a long time ago. Romulus says there was a theory validators would bribe MNDE holders to delegate MSOL. That was a theory. I see. I mean, that makes sense. I think some places do that actually. Like Solana Hub, I think is what it's called, is at least one of them where they reward you with SOL for directing a stake to their validator through MNDE, I believe. They at least did that for MSOL when you could direct stake with MSOL, but I think Marinade got rid of that. So yeah, it's just MNDE now. But like the thing is, like that thing only works super well for MNDE holders if there's competition. Ban this scammer. Let's see. Yeah, so like there has to be competition among the people bribing, or else the value of the bribes will stay very low. Because like say you have a bunch of MNDE and you have no validator, so you have no way to generate any revenue from MNDE. But then a briber comes along and he's like, hey, I'll give you like 0.1 SOL to direct your million SOL to my validator. That means they get to generate like, I don't know, like 70K. I don't know if I did the math right there. But like a 70K of SOL, like 7% on their 1 million per year, which is like a shit ton. And then you only get 0.1. But you still have to accept that because that's the best offer. That's like, you can't do any better than that. So that's why I say there needs to be competition between bribers to like outbid each other for your MNDE directed stake. But yeah, there really wasn't a market for that. Yeah, like now Marinade, it has created that for MSOL. And it seems like it would make a lot of sense to do something similar for MNDE. Like, are you guys familiar with VODA? It's like something created by MetaDAO a while back. And you can use it to, you can delegate your Saber, your VE Saber, to this VODA app, and it will vote for pools and optimize your rewards that you get from that. You can basically sell your VE Saber votes for money. And I was like, you should do that. You guys should build that for MNDE, because that would result in the exact dynamic that I just explained, where like MNDE holders get to sell their directed stake, and validators can bid for it. And so it results in a competitive dynamic where the rewards will, like, for MND holders will be maximized because there's competition. Anyways, yeah, so like, I mean, I think it still makes sense, but yeah, I don't know if it exists. Or like if there is competition, like it's all like it's not in the open really. It's like backroom deals. I don't mean to make it sound shady, because it isn't probably. It's just it's all happening in like private chats is what I mean. there's no like open protocol where all MND holders can participate. And that's kind of unfortunate. But yeah, for us, it doesn't really matter because we do have a validator. So we don't need to sell our directed stake. We can just use it for ourselves, and that maximizes rewards for us. Yay. All right. Ezekiel says, is there a metric that shows how Sandglass is growing? You can check the volumes. And right now we only have 24 hour volume, so like you would have to like check daily to get an idea of how things are changing. There's also TVL, but deposits haven't been like enormous. Most of it is our own protocol own liquidity. So yeah, hopefully that changes. Like, I guess in Pendle's case, I think a big part of their adoption, like a big part of their APY was their token incentives. So, I mean, that could make sense for us. But yeah, I think those are the two metrics you can look at right now. We'll probably improve metric visibility eventually, because that does matter for adoption. But like right now, it's not the most important thing, I think. So we're more focused on like opening new vaults and stuff. And Ezekiel asks, is there a marketing campaign planned to boost volumes / awareness about the protocol? Or is it plan to just keep current organic growth? Now, I think it will eventually make more sense to ramp up marketing. Maybe not quite yet. Like, when we do ramp up marketing, we want to be sure that like there's enough vaults that can interest a diverse group of asset holders. Like, just as a toy example, like if we did marketing when we only had the MSOL vault, which is our first one, like that would have been like not very useful, because it's like we tell people about our product, but the product only supports one asset, and so yeah, like it wouldn't lead to much usage. So we want to be sure that we have a very diverse group of assets that we support, and ideally be audited as well. We want to kind of have like all the pieces in place before we go like all in on trying to market it, because like marketing costs money, and it also like it's sort of a thing that you can like only do once. Sort of like a lot of people, they will hear about your protocol, check it out, and if they don't like it the first time, they never come back, even if they hear about it again. It's like, oh, I already checked it out last time and it was underwhelming. Like, they only had MSOL, so like they probably don't have much else right now either, or whatever, you know. So we want to be sure that like we are awesome from the first time that people check us out. Yeah, so that's kind of the thinking on that. Cool. Ezekiel's got something to say. So one big marketing campaign when ready will involve token incentives. Did I understand it correctly? not my words. Yeah, I mean, all the details haven't been determined yet. And like the marketing campaign, like it doesn't have to be one big one. Because like if our platform is awesome, like all I was trying to say is that we shouldn't do marketing when our platform is not yet like super awesome, essentially. Because we don't want to market to people only to have them find an underwhelming protocol. But like it can make sense to do a marketing campaign more than once, because one marketing campaign doesn't necessarily reach everyone, right? So like doing it a different type of campaign again can reach a new group of people who didn't hear about us the first time around. And then, yeah, token incentives, if and when we do those, yeah, obviously that would make a lot of sense for that to be part of the marketing. I mean, token incentives are kind of their own marketing campaign. Like, people will talk about it for you. Because like it just drives so much engagement, right? Cool. Well, I think I might wrap it up there for today. Thanks everyone for joining. Good questions as always. And let's see what November brings us. What comes after October? Grovember? I don't know. But yeah, I appreciate you guys for showing up, and see you around in the chats. Have a great day.